You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Buenos dias, world, from the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance. I'm Marco Wendt.
And I'm Rick Schwartz. And we're your hosts for Season 3 of Amazing Wildlife, a show from iHeartRadio Ruby Studio and the global conservation organization behind the San Diego Zoo and the San Diego Zoo Safari Park.
Listen as we dive into the efforts here in San Diego and spotlight the heroes working worldwide to care for the species you know and love.
Listen to Amazing Wildlife on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Jamie Dumont.
I'm Rob Russo.
And this is The Fabulous Invalid. Hi, Rob.
Hi, Jamie.
Well, the ladies are away today. Yes. They are off doing their various shows. Mm-hmm. Good for them. Yeah. Which, as we established at the very beginning, sometimes it would just be the two of us.
Yeah, just the two of us.
We've yet to have one where it's
just one.
Like me or you talking into a microphone, right. Which I don't know if I would download
monologue.
That
yeah.
show.
I might delete that. Yeah, that wouldn't be a good idea.
So we won't do that to you
no,
people.
But no.
You people, that sounded terrible. We're going to cut that. We won't do that to anyone.
To you people.
Wow.
Our beloved audience.
Hi, I'm Jamie Dumont, and I'm an asshole. So what's going on?
I just got back from a week in London.
You are always getting back from a week in London.
It kind of feels that way lately. Yeah, I know. Well, this one was sort of a lark of a trip. I was on the ground for 4 days and I saw 7 shows, which
killer.
Was so much fun. Yeah, I was the best fun.
You realize there's a small sect of the population in the world that finds that fun.
Yeah.
And hopefully they all listen to us.
For sure.
And can appreciate that.
It's a very niche disability that I have, or compulsion.
No, I get it. You land in London and you suddenly realize there's a Thursday matinee.
Right, well, that's what it was.
Or there's a Monday, or I guess it's Sunday is the nights they don't play.
Yeah.
There's a Sunday show and it's not Phantom.
Yeah, I know.
And you're so excited.
Yeah, well, I built the trip around All About Eve, which is the new Eva Von Hove production. And that was a Thursday matinee. So as soon as I had that locked, it was like, oh, well, now I've got to, you know, fill every other time slot around it.
So you're in London. You're seeing All About Eve.
I saw All About Eve. Yeah, it was terrific. You know, the show didn't get particularly positive reviews over there, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. If you know Eva Von Hove, he's an auteur. He's a director who has a very, very specific language, the way that he works, very visual, very visceral. He always incorporates like live film work into his productions and fluids, as Jamie always jokes about.
It always ends in a puddle of milk.
Right. This one
every
did not
show
end in a puddle of milk, but
I wouldn't be surprised.
There
if
were
did.
Less fluids involved in this production.
Oh, well, that's good.
Really quickly, other things I saw. I went back to see Company because I had to.
Oh my God.
So terrific. I saw Follies at the National Theater, which is also in revival.
Tracy Bennett.
Tracy Bennett, guest of the show.
How was it finally seeing Tracy on the stage?
Oh my gosh.
In that show.
She was so fantastic. The whole show is just absolutely stunning.
Black sable one day, next day it goes into hock. But I'm here. Top billing Monday, Tuesday you're touring in stock. But I'm here. First you're another slow-eyed vamp, then someone's mother, then your camp, then you career from career to career. I'm almost through my memoirs, and I'm here.
I mean, it's hard to imagine a production that could be as environmentally successful as it is at the National, because it's in the Olivier Theater, which is a huge, huge theater, very, very deep, very, very wide, no proscenium, and it gives you the real thrust stage. So it gives you an opportunity to really do something on an epic, massive scale that you cannot do on Broadway. I mean, except for the Vivian Beaumont Theater, there's no other theater that can house this production. And it's just stunning. It's a masterpiece.
It is a masterpiece.
It's a masterpiece. And on the flight over, I read Ted Chapin's excellent book, Everything Was Possible, which is his memoir.
Which I'm holding right
which
here.
Which Jamie's holding in his hand.
Just bought a copy of it at the Strand bookstore about an hour and a half ago.
There you go.
And the lady was like, oh, this just came in.
Oh.
How funny is that?
Weird.
No, don't talk to me then. I forget what were we like. It's so hazy. Look at these people, aren't they eerie? Look at this party, isn't it dreary? I'm so glad I came. So just look at us, fat,
turning gray,
still playing games, acting crazy. Isn't it awful?
God, how depressing. Me, I'm 100, you, you're a blessing. I'm so glad I came. What we need is a drink.
And then real quick, the last last thing I wanted to talk about for my trip is I saw, and the show that actually has stuck with me the most beyond Follies, which is just brilliant, is I saw a revival of The American Clock, which is an Arthur Miller play from 1980 that ran, I think, 11 performances on Broadway or 12 performances on Broadway, and basically disappeared. And director Rachel Chavkin, who's an American director who did The Great Comet and is doing Hadestown on Broadway this spring, worked with the Old Vic, which is a wonderful theater in London, to create a new production of it that infuses music into the storytelling. So the play is like a three-hour plotless, episodic, impressionistic look at the Great Depression. It's semi-autobiographical. Miller incorporates a family, a central family that's based off of his own family. But also he drew on Studs Terkel's oral history of the Great Depression to interpolate a bunch of other stories from all around the country. So there's a scene in Iowa, there's a scene in Mississippi. And what it creates, in the end, is a really, really searing, emotional, humane and beautiful portrait of what it was like to live in America during the Great Depression. It didn't get particularly good reviews, which is a shame, but it's such an ambitious and exciting work, and it's so American, which is why it's literally called The American Clock. So I'm kind of shocked, I'm not shocked, but, it's not shocking to me, rather, that a British audience would be a little cool to it. But I think in America, it really could be something special. Paging the Public Theater, be a perfect...
That seems like a hard one to come over.
Yeah, well, I know.
It doesn't seem like there's a big audience for that.
Yeah, but Rachel Chavkin is really just a star right now, and her work is fantastic. So, I don't know, but I thought it was thrilling. I thought it was wonderful.
I think this might be a good time to actually say that we don't have a guest today. Wah, wah. So, we are just going to do a quick spring preview.
Yeah.
Which... There's an Arthur Miller play coming up.
There is an Arthur Miller. What a good segue.
Yes. Let's maybe go on to that. What is the Arthur? It's All My Sons, right?
All My Sons.
Rob was very good to do a list
all of, them.
Of what's coming up and yeah. Said it to me because, as I say every week practically, I am a disaster with facts and figures. I'm pretty good with facts, but I just my memory is not terrific with these kinds of things.
No, you need a list because there's a lot.
There's a lot going on. Yeah. So how do you want to tackle this?
Let's go categorically.
Oh, okay. So you want to start with... So we'll just start at the top of your list and work our way down.
Let's start at the very beginning. a really good place to start.
I knew you were going to say that. Well, I guess the first place to start is there's currently a mailer going out that has Rob Russo and Stage Left as one of their pull quotes. Mm-hmm. Best of the year.
Best of the year. That's
Yay.
Correct.
And that would be, Rob?
What the Constitution Means to Me.
Which was your number one show of last year?
My number one play of the year. Right. Yeah, it was number two on my list because Oklahoma was my number one show of the year. But What the Constitution Means to Me was number one for plays.
Which I never got around to seeing, by
the way. Well, now you have a chance.
And I know.
So do all of our listeners for 12 weeks on Broadway this spring.
Very exciting.
Heidi Schreck's mostly one-woman show, which there's other characters on stage with her. What the Constitution Means to Me is a sort of a late-season replacement at the Helen Hayes Theater.
And then it goes out around the country, right?
I believe so. I think it's going to have...
Everyone has a... Well, maybe we'll get Heidi on here.
That would be fantastic.
That would be great.
Yeah, she has created just a really, really beautiful, personal... intimate evening of theater that is at the intersection of so much of what is the zeitgeist right now.
I have to say, I think the thing I'm the most looking forward to is Gary, a sequel to Titus Andronicus.
Yes.
Which, I'm not a huge fan of Titus Andronicus. I mean, I love anything where everyone dies and the whole stage is soaked in blood at the end.
Shakespeare's bloodiest, yeah.
It is, yes, it's very perverted.
Quite the body count.
The body count, and there's like a mother eats a son. I mean, there's I can't remember, but it's nasty. This is, however, Taylor Mack, the performance artist, I guess would be the best way to describe Taylor. Nathan Lane, Andrew Martin, and
Christine Nelson,
and Christine
Christine Nielsen. Nielsen,
Christine Nielsen. who is a fabulous actress. I think it's going to be incredible. I don't know if it's going to be everyone's cup of tea, but I think it's going to really... I think it's going to be sensational.
And hats off to the producers of this play, because I think that's exactly right. It's not going to be everyone's cup of tea, and that's exciting to have a play on Broadway that is pushing the limits of what people think of as a commercial play in a Broadway house. So I can't wait to see it. I'm very excited.
And the last new play to open this spring, I'm embarrassed to say I know nothing about. Ink. I honestly, and I didn't bother looking it up because I thought I would show my ass in front of the world.
Ass has been shown.
I don't know. What is it?
So Ink is it's a transfer from London at Manhattan Theater Club, and I believe it's a play about Rupert Murdoch and his media, you know, dynasty or conglomerate or whatever phrase you want to use. It's supposed to be quite... good.
Oh,
yeah,
right.
No, it was a huge hit in London and sort of was a real score for Manhattan Theater Club to slot it in their season. Yeah, yeah. I will say you did skip one play, and I don't know if that was intentional or not, but Hillary and Clinton.
Oh, my God. Whoa.
So quite the omission.
Wow. Well, that's I was leaving it for you.
Oh, well, there you go.
That's odd.
Well, this season, this spring, I think the most exciting... work is really happening, you know, sort of boundary pushing work is happening in the space of new plays between What the Constitution Means to Me, Gary, and Hillary and Clinton, which is a play by Lucas Naith, who a couple seasons ago had written A Doll's House Part 2, which was a huge smash. It was my favorite play of that year.
I think it's my favorite play of the last...
Oh, my God.
Decade, maybe.
It was
trying
so
to think
brilliant.
Of something that comes close to it.
Yeah, no, it was 90 minutes of pure riveting brilliance.
Yeah.
And that was, of course, the writing and the direction by Sam Gold, but also Laurie Metcalf, who was just phenomenal. And of course,
and Jane Howdy Show. And,
yeah, I mean, the whole,
everything about it. And I want to say, I almost said Condoleezza Rice.
Okay, we're cutting that.
We have to cut that. Condoleezza Rice. Oops. I'm very tired today. I'm very sorry. I'm half here. And Condola Rashad,
who was, I thought,
a revelation because I was not that familiar with her work, and she was just...
And Chris Cooper. The whole thing was just a perfect package.
Yeah.
And so he's returning with this play, which actually I believe was written potentially before A Doll's House Part 2. It was written many years ago.
I think it
was. And is now getting its New York debut, Broadway debut. And it's sort of an imaginary account in a different galaxy of a woman named Hillary Clinton who's running for president, and it's the eve of the New Hampshire primary, And it's modeled off of 2008 and that that election cycle. And it follows, you know, from my I read the published version of the play, which, you know, it was, again, I think it was produced in like 2010 or something.
Yeah, who knows if it's that's what's gonna.
Right, I'm sure it's been updated since, because how could it not? It's such a, you know, it's such a contemporary
piece.
Some
stuff has happened.
Yeah, some stuff has happened, exactly. But it follows, you know, the lead up to the New Hampshire primary and the sort of behind the scenes drama, but it's really, you know, a character portrait of a female politician who's running for president. And it's not meant to be specifically Hillary Clinton. That's what's so interesting about it, is that it's, you know, borrowing this narrative.
What very clearly says in the stage direction, do not hire actors who look like or represent these people in any way.
And in fact, Laurie Metcalf, who's playing the character of Hillary Clinton in this play, is the first time that a white woman is playing.
Right.
It is, to date, it has only been played by black women.
Right.
So it's a very interesting play. I think it has the potential to be a real fascinating surprise. And Joe Mantello's directing. You know, we just talked about Joe, actually.
It's going to be great.
Yeah, very exciting. And it caps a season that really, I think, will be known for its plays, Between the Ferryman and To Kill a Mockingbird. It's really been quite a time for plays.
It's the season of the play.
Yeah.
Well, that said, new musicals.
New musicals, yes. Well, the first new musical to open this spring is Be More Chill, which was a sensation off-Broadway, sold out last summer at the Signature Center on 42nd Street. And what's amazing about this show is that it has sort of been willed into production re-existence on the strength of its internet fan base, which is so exciting and phenomenal for Broadway to have a show that young people in particular, specifically young people on the internet, are so excited about. So it premiered in 2015, I believe, at Two River Theater in New Jersey, Red Bank, New Jersey, I believe, and was sort of like a little blip. I think it got, you know, some middling reviews, and no one really cared about it. And they recorded a cast album, and that cast album went on to become one of the most streamed cast albums ever online.
Isn't it more streamed than like Dear Evan Hansen?
Yes.
I think.
Yeah, I think it's second only to Hamilton or something, which is, you know, saying something.
It's also the first time Aaron's spoken up about any of the shows that we're talking about today.
Yeah.
And Aaron is, are you a millennial technically?
We're millennials.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, we're the same age. Yeah.
Do you not know?
I'm not sure what counts and what doesn't.
I don't know either.
We're the no labels generation. Yeah. So.
Well, you're half my age. That I know.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, you are. That I know.
I don't think so.
You definitely are. I'm not going to give away your age, but you are. Do you know how old I am?
You look great if you're actually twice my age.
Aaron's always worried about losing his job.
I have what he's having.
I love that about Aaron. Yes, so Be More Chill is a new musical, and it's loved by young people.
Michael in the bathroom. Michael in the bathroom at a party. Forget how long it's been. I'm just Michael in the bathroom. Michael in the bathroom at a party. No, you can't come in. I'm waiting it out till it's time to leave, and picking at grout as I softly grieve. I'm just Michael, who you don't know. Michael flying solo. Michael in the bathroom by himself. All by himself.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that With brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Second show to open.
Ain't Too Proud.
Ooh, talk about
it. Which is a show I've seen quite a few times.
Yes, that's right. You've sort of followed the tour.
I have sort of followed. I have definitely followed. I have, in fact, followed the tour.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, I'm a big fan. I think it's great.
Yeah, so it was in what? It was in D.C. and Toronto.
It was D.C., Los Angeles, and Toronto.
Yeah, prior to Broadway.
Were the three pre-Broadway stops. I love it. I think it's great. I think it's, but I'm all in for, and I hate the word jukebox musical. We've talked about this before.
We did a whole thing about it.
But I'm all in for one. I want to be entertained.
Yeah.
Motown is my thing.
Yeah.
The Temptations are my thing.
Yeah.
The Supremes, I think. All you have to do is look at my Instagram account to know that I've got a thing for Diana Ross.
Yeah.
So this is right up my alley.
Yeah.
And I also think it's a beautiful production, and I think the music is served beautifully, and I think the book is quite good.
Yeah. No, I mean, well, I'm glad you ended on that note, because the thing that really piques my interest in the show, beyond the fact that it looks like a lot of fun, is that Dominique Morisseau, the playwright, has written the book.
Right, which is an odd choice to write the book of a musical, and yet it works beautifully.
Right. Well, and it's interesting. It's, picking up on a trend of sort of prestige playwrights getting pulled to write the books for musicals. Lynn Nottage is writing the book for the Michael Jackson musical, Don't Stop Till You Get Enough. I mean, she's a Pulitzer Prize winner, finalist, winner. I think she has a Pulitzer Prize. So, she's not exactly the person you would imagine to be writing the book for a Michael Jackson musical, but...
Doesn't she have a Pulitzer Prize?
I'm pretty sure she does, for Sweat, right? Didn't it win
the
Pulitzer? Yeah. Which is very exciting. I can't wait to see that. Speaking of always being in London, last fall I saw the pre-Broadway production of Hadestown, which is the next musical to open this after Ain't Too Proud on Broadway, directed by Rachel Chavkin, who we just talked about. I am very, very excited to see this again. I believe premiered at the New York Theatre Workshop back in 2016.
It did.
And has gone through, some rewrites, some development, and is now ready for Broadway. It's sort of a, not a modern retelling, but it's the Orpheus and Eurydice tale told using sort of a Southern New Orleans jazz idiom as its music. And it's quite a stunning production.
I'm very excited.
Yeah.
I'm also very excited for Tootsie, which I have... not seen.
Too.
Which we have talked about on this show.
Yes.
Noah Galvin.
That's right.
My husband has seen it, and he loved it.
He was in Chicago last fall.
He went to Chicago to see it.
Yeah.
I'm very excited.
Well, here's the thing. Score by David Yazbek is all I need to hear.
I'm so in for that.
To get me, to the theater. Yeah. I'm a huge fan of his work. Obviously, finally won a Tony Award for The Band's Visit. But from Dirty Rotten Scoundrels to The Full Monty to even Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown, which I loved.
He should have won for Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
I forget it won that year, but...
That Spamalot show.
Won Best Score?
Yeah, I think they did.
Really?
I think they did. Google it. I'm pretty sure they did.
I will. So I'm very, very intrigued, very excited, as we talked about, obviously... Tootsie, the 1982.
Did you hear the disgust in my voice when I said that Spamalot show? Just want that not to go unnoticed.
It did win Best Musical and ran for 4 years.
It did.
That little show.
I like Monty Python, too.
Oh, I love Monty Python.
Yeah, so Tootsie, I think, I'm very excited. We digress. Another person I would see perform anything is Julie Halston.
Mm.
Just adore Julie Halston.
Yeah, no, this should be a very good musical, and I'm very intrigued to see it though because what they've done with it. Because my understanding is they have done a lot to the story, because when it was first announced, the idea of doing Tootsie a 1982 film about a man who dresses up as a woman to get work in the TV industry, just sort of is a little bit odd of a choice in this moment, especially because when it was announced, it had an entire male creative team.
Right.
And I think that actually, I don't know if that's changed, but apparently they've done some big rewrites.
I think they have.
To tinker with the story to make it more of today. So that should be fun. And the last new musical of the season...
Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
You read my mind, Jamie. I knew you were going to say it three times.
Did you?
Well, I was hoping you would.
Oh, I'm surprised I did. I'm surprised I knew that.
There you, of course.
I think the only reason I know it is because we saw it in D.C. a few months ago.
That's right. And so Beetlejuice featuring...
Leslie Kritzer.
The one and only Leslie Kritzer. I am so excited to see her back on stage on Broadway, where she belongs.
I am too. I agree.
And to see what they've done, you know, we talked about this briefly when we talked about the show with her. Is I love seeing a show out of town and then seeing it on Broadway because it's like a fun little experiment. You get to see, you know, there's things you liked, there's things you didn't like, and then you get to see what changed. Coming from DC to Broadway,
say that they're doing quite a bit of work.
She did say they were changing some stuff.
Well, so exciting.
Yeah, very exciting. And I had a similar personal journey with Mean Girls, which was very satisfying.
Did.
You know, having seen the pre-Broadway to Broadway, so I'm very 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 eager to get back and see that show, and I can't wait to see the set again, especially at the Winter Garden, which is, you know, such an amazing theater.
I can't wait to see Jill Abramowitz's little moment. Not right. Little moment. She has several great moments throughout the show. Oh, but she has one in particular that I don't want to give away because I don't want to give anything away. But it's I can't remember laughing that hard than I did that night in the theater.
Quite funny.
So now I guess we go on to revivals.
Revivals, yes.
This one is already in previews,
that's
which
right.
is Kiss Me, Kate.
Mm-hmm.
Which is one of my favorite shows.
I know, you've talked about that before.
I love that show. I love that score. It's one of the first musicals I fell in love with as a little gay boy.
And it's so brilliant.
It is a clever.
It's an absolutely brilliant conceit.
It's a very clever score, and there's a lot of double entendres in that. I mean, it's a very...
Well, it's
like,
Cole Porter. I mean, king of... Or the queen of double entendres.
His lyrics are so gay. I mean, they really are.
She's a maid who would marry and would no longer tarry. She's a maid who would marry, may my hopes not miscarry. She's a maid not to marry and will take double quick any time. Death or Harry, any time, Harry or Dick.
So I'm curious. I'm a big Kelly O'Hara fan. I'm a big Will Chase fan.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And I just read that Stuart Pankow is one of the gangsters. Do you know Stuart Pankow?
I don't.
Am I getting his name right?
No.
He's an actor. You'll go, oh, him, the guy from...
Right,
he's like
course,
the guy that's in everything.
Well, this is a Roundabout Theater Company production at Studio 54, and Scott Ellis is directing. He's also directing Tootsie, so I don't know how he's
Pankow.
Keeping his schedule. John Pankow?
I interrupted you.
There you go.
I just had a jolt of caffeine.
There you go. And Warren Carlyle is doing the choreography. I love his work. He last did Hello, Dolly! On Broadway, which was just... brilliant.
Which I saw in San Francisco.
There you go. That's right.
Did. Well, that's the reason we don't have a guest this week.
Right.
I was going to chat with Betty Buckley, and then our schedules didn't line up. And anyway.
But I'm excited to see Kiss Me, Kate. For me, as we've established, you know, Aaron and I are a little younger than Jamie. I saw the last revival of Kiss Me, Kate on Broadway in 1999.
Yeah.
And for me, that was a really, really formative experience. It was just a landmark sort of benchmark for a great revival. And I know...
I didn't love that
Jamie
revival.
Has opinions on it. I know
I
that's right.
Not
he didn't love
that
it,
revival.
But I did. 13-year-old me loved it.
Yeah. Well, that's okay.
Yeah. No, of course.
I'll allow that.
So I'm excited to see it again. Yeah. And also Amanda Green, who's the daughter of... Adolf Green.
the daughter of Betty Compton.
No.
Wrong.
Who wrote Hands on a Hard Body. You know, she's her own acclaimed writer
in
her own right.
Correct.
She has penned some changes
to the
script.
Well, I think they've made it a little more, they've taken a slightly more feminist approach to the
correct.
Material.
There is, I believe, in the original version, some butt slapping. I'm not saying that right. But you know what I mean.
But that's also the Shakespeare.
That's the show within the show.
That's in the Shakespeare. In Taming of the Shrew, he puts Kate mm-hmm. over his lap, and he spanks her.
Spank, not slap.
Yeah.
Different.
Yeah, I mean, you're like booty slap.
I know, you got to get like your slaps.
No. It's a proper spanking.
Yeah,
And that actually ends the first act.
That's right.
So yeah. I don't know if they've changed that. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. And we'll report back.
And there's this, she slaps him. There's a bit of...
A lot physical. Of slapping. Speaking of Shakespeare, second big revival. This season.
I'm very excited.
The spring season is King Lear.
King Lear, yeah.
With the one and only Glenda Jackson.
It's quite a cast.
Oh my gosh.
Ruth Wilson, mm-hmm. who is amazing.
Jane Howdy Shell.
Who is amazing. Mm-hmm. And Elizabeth Marvel, who is amazing. playing, what is she playing, Cordelia?
I don't know.
I think she's playing, or Goneril. She thinks she's Goneril. Mm-hmm. She's the nasty one.
And I just read today, Michael Arden, the director, you know, who Once on This Island and Spring Awakening, is who used to be an actor, is returning to his acting roots and is in this play as well.
Directed by?
Sam Gold.
Mm-hmm. Very exciting.
Yeah.
That's...
Sam Gold never fails to provide a really, really visually stunning production. His version of Hamlet at the Public two years ago blew me away. Absolutely blew me away. And his Glass Menagerie on Broadway with Sally Field people had opinions with a capital O about that production. But that's exciting. I love a director who
A chance.
Exactly. Yep. So I can't wait to see what he does with King Lear, you know, a 400-year-old play.
Gonna have to get out the Cliff Notes for that one.
That's right.
Do you know what Cliff Notes are?
Of course I know what Cliff Notes are.
Do you know what Cliff Notes are?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, everyone knows what a Cliff Note is.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I've never used Cliff Notes.
It's a website, right?
Oh, God. Are you serious?
It's an app, right?
Oh, fuck both of you.
I used Spark Notes when I was in, like, middle school. Do you remember that? It was a website.
Sort of.
I think it's the same idea as Cliff Notes, just online and called Spark Notes.
Cliff Notes is... Yeah. Pretty much how I got through college.
Those little yellow books, right?
With the black and...
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's a Cliff Note.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. You seem to be very familiar with King Lear. I mean, you're dropping character names left and right.
Well, you don't know this about me, but I'm actually a big Shakespeare fan.
Uh-huh.
And I used to, when I was a West Coast resident many, many years ago, I would go to the Ashland Shakespeare Festival in the summertime, which was a big deal for me. And my husband to this day will say, okay, explain to me what's happening. Like, whenever we go... to see anything. He's like, tell me what's going on. I always have to brief him.
Yeah.
It's been a few years.
Well, King Lear is a weak spot in my Shakespearean experiences. I've only seen it once.
Did you see the Ian McKellen?
No, I saw Anthony Scher at at BAM.
Right. Yeah. That wasn't that long
ago. No, it was last year. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that was my first King Lear.
King Lear's another happy piece of theater. that we have that to look forward to.
Well, speaking of happy.
Yes.
Oklahoma, !! The next revival.
Doing fine. You're doing fine.
Certainly.
Well, we just had an Oklahoma show. So I feel like this is... well covered.
Listen to our episode with Mary Test and Ali Stroker.
Territory, yes.
Speaking of territory.
But it is, it's fucking brilliant.
Yeah, go see it. Get tickets.
You know, I said I was going to swear less, and I've said fuck like 3 times already.
Oh, I haven't even noticed. I'm so used to your potty mouth.
I know.
That even faze me.
I try to be a better person around you, but I'm not successful.
It's about the trying.
Barbara Rush, the actress Barbara Rush, whom probably five people on the planet remember. So Barbara Rush was a friend of ours years ago, and she used to say, I think swearing shows a certain laziness. And you know what? Every so often I hear those words and I think, oh, fuck her.
Okay. Can I ask you a question about Oklahoma?
You certainly can.
Oh, in terms of, like, for people getting tickets, how... big is this like gonna be the big show this year, do you think?
I think that's a hard question to answer at this point. I think if you look at the trajectory of the show and you look at St. Anne's Warehouse and what a huge hit it was there, I think there's a reasonable assumption. However, as Rob can attest, sometimes when things transfer, the magic doesn't continue. Right. I think Be More Chill also has that thing to contend with, which is Does Be More Chill, I wasn't going to go here, but I am, does Be More Chill belong on Broadway, or should they have stayed off Broadway? And Oklahoma, the same thing.
Same question, yeah.
Right? Like, it's we won't know until these shows get up and running. Certainly, all indications point to both shows being huge smash successes.
Right.
Yeah. I believe Be More Chill is breaking records at the Lyceum, and I think Oklahoma is selling very well. I don't know this to be a fact, but so, yeah, I think it could be huge. It's certainly, what do we have, two revivals?
Two musical revivals, yeah, this spring. Yeah,
we've
and that's
Kiss
it.
Me,
that's
Kate.
The whole season. Yeah.
And, you know, the Roundabout's kind of a unique thing because the Roundabout has a huge subscriber base.
Right.
So their shows do well always just because
they have a built-in audience.
They have a huge, huge subscriber base. However, when a show is a big hit there, it's you can't get in.
Page and Cabaret.
Cabaret, Pajama Game. I mean, that Pajama Game's an old reference, but I have Kelly O'Hara on the brain. So, yeah, I think, I hope so. I mean, I hope for many reasons.
Right. Well, the thing to keep in mind is too, that this is a limited run. Only through Labor Day, Oklahoma.
Why? Is there something coming in after?
I don't know, but they've announced it as a limited engagement. So maybe the theater's
booked.
Yeah, but
isn't that a marketing
deal? I don't know. I'm just saying, get your tickets. yeah, definitely.
But we'll get you in there.
Oh no, I'm
called
just
you
saying,
Eric. No. Who the fuck is Eric?
That's one I've told most of my friends. Like in terms of shows that are coming, even friends who have no interest in theater, I've said Oklahoma is one I've heard about through multiple sources of media, whether or not they're interested in theater, and it's the one that I think, and after listening to the music for last week too, I think I told you, I was like, this music is, I loved it.
Richard Rodgers, he knows what he's doing. He's going to be big. He's going to be huge.
Yeah.
I think it's the...
Up-and-coming name. He's on Spotify's rising list.
Yeah. Star to look out for. I think this production has tapped into everything that works about the show.
Oh yeah.
And twisted it to another level, right? With the bluegrass
orchestrations.
I don't want to say the relaxed approach, but it's a very modern take. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've discussed this countless times.
Yeah.
What's spelling? I can't wait.
Yeah.
Cannot wait.
Yeah.
Burn this,
that's right. So this is a Lanford Wilson play from, I believe, the 1980s that is coming to the Hudson Theater with Adam Driver and Kerry Russell.
Have you seen Burn This?
Very big names. I never have.
I saw it with Joan Allen and Lou Liberatore and John Malkovich at the Mark Taper Forum.
Wow.
I can't remember if it was pre-Broadway or in those days.
Yeah, right.
In my time.
Well, it premiered on Broadway in 1987. I was 6 months old.
So you didn't see it.
So I didn't see it. I wasn't allowed in the theater. But
what I was gonna say before you Googled that information was that in those days, stars of a show would go out and tour, right? So the entire company, so if a play was a hit on Broadway, it would play a year, year and a half, and then they'd hit the major cities. So I think that's what that was.
Yeah. Well, this is very exciting. You know, Adam Driver is quite a phenomenal actor. And I said this about Lucas Hedges, and I'll say about him. I think it says a lot about an actor when fresh off of an Oscar nomination, they choose to come do a play in New York.
You love a Lucas Hedges.
I do love a Lucas
You can't see this, but Rob is blushing.
Stop it.
You are.
We're in a pink room. It's just the color.
No, you're blushing. Yeah. And then the last show we sort of touched on already, which is All My Sons.
That's right.
Which is how we got here.
Bringing us full circle.
Well, that's the season.
That's the spring season, yeah.
Then we have the Tonys on June 9th, and we start all over again.
All over again.
Well, you have a take, too, you wanted to do.
Oh, I do. That's right. Thank you, Jamie, for reminding me. So a couple weeks ago, in our episode with Jacob Dickey, I did a little feature on the history of the New Amsterdam Theater. And in the course of my research, I relied upon a New York Times article from 1997, when the theater reopened. And in that article, they said that Disney had signed a 49-year lease with the theater, on the theater, when in fact they had signed a 99-year lease on the theater. So Just wanted to make sure that was on the record. Disney will not be kicked out in 2044. They have another 50 years to use the space.
Did you do the math on that, or did you?
I did the math.
You knew it. You knew that number.
I did that off the top of my head. I'm very impressed.
Well, you know, or
whatever the year is. Yeah. So I wanted to make sure I got that on the record because I don't want to offend the mouse.
No, God forbid. And I'm shocked that the New York Times got a fact wrong.
Could you believe that? And Bruce Weber, who was the theater critic at the time in the 90s, wrote the article. I apologize for not having three sources behind every fact in my in my little segment, which I guess is like the standard, right? The journalistic standard. You'd have to have three resources.
Yeah, I'm a little shocked, too. I'm a little sad and disappointed.
Right. Am I fired? Am I on probation?
Fired from the job you do for free?
Right, exactly.
Yes, you are, Rob. Well, on that note, I think this was fun. We took a little trip down the future.
Down
future lane.
We're off to see Fiddler on the Roof.
We are off to see Fiddler on the Roof.
David Gordon, who's a theater critic who I follow on Twitter, last night, I think he must have seen the show. He tweeted, "I always scream, 'Don't go to Warsaw' at Seidel and Model, but they never listen."
They never listen.
You know, it's heartbreaking.
You know what I didn't realize is that Julie McGinnis sings the song we put on the show a couple of weeks ago.
Far From the Home I Love.
Thank you. Yeah. The brain just doesn't work. I can't pull this shit up. But that was Julia. You know Julia McGinnis? Do you know who that is?
I don't know who that is.
She ended up becoming a very big opera and recording star in the 70s, late 70s and 80s.
Wow.
It's Fiddler.
Yeah.
It's like Bette Midler, right. Julia McGinnis.
Pendleton.
Austin Pendleton.
Yeah, amazing, amazing cast.
It's just, it's the show that keeps on giving.
Mm-hmm. And once again, we've managed to work it into an episode.
Yeah, and I'll probably have to put a little more music on there. All right, well, on that note...
Brilliant.
All right, I'll see you soon.
Yes.
Tradition.
That's our show. Thanks for listening. Fabulous Invalid is a production of O&M Etc. and the Fabulous Invalid LLC. Today's show was edited and engineered by Aaron Kaufman. Find us on social media at Fabulous Invalid. Like us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Be sure to tune in and listen on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you download podcasts.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.